When you need expert help and advice on issues affecting your business, NFU Cymru, we're here for you.
Farmers Guardian is proud to work alongside the Rock and Roll Farming Podcast. For all the latest news and features from across the ag industry, head to fginsight.com. You'll also find a wide variety of advice pieces to help you and your farming business flourish.
Want to get to know the people who produce the food that you eat? This is the place. Step this way and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming. Rock and Roll Farming is proud to be part of the Farm and Rural Ag Network. For more great agriculture-related podcasts and vlogs, please visit farmruralag.com.
Farm Africa!
Oye!
Uganda!
Oye!
Kanungu!
Oye!
Youth!
Oye!
Women!
Oye!
Coffee!
Oye!
UK!
Oye!
What you've just heard is the reaction of farmers in Kanunga, Uganda, to hearing that Farm Africa's Coffee is Life appeal has launched. Between 8th of February and 8th of May, donations in support of my London Marathon Challenge will go to Farm Africa's Coffee is Life appeal. If you can donate before 8th of May 2019, all public donations to Farm Africa's Coffee is Life appeal will be doubled by the UK government. What a country. Your donation will support Farm Africa projects across Eastern Africa, and the matched funding you unlock from the UK government will directly fund a Farm Africa project that will give women in Kanungu in Western Uganda the opportunity to make a decent living from coffee farming. I'm trying to raise £5,000 to support the appeal, and if you could spare anything at all, we would greatly appreciate it. Just visit justgiving.com/fundraising/William-Evans12, and I will put that link in the show notes. Thank you. Hey everybody, and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming episode 114. I'm your host, Will Evans, and this is a Nuffield Farming Scholarship Trust special edition. If you're not familiar with Nuffield, every year about 20 scholarships are awarded in the UK to young people between the ages of 22 and 45 from across the agricultural industry. There is no need for formal qualifications in order to apply for a Nuffield scholarship. Instead, the Trust are looking to unlock an individual's potential and broaden horizons through study and travel overseas. Scholars are selected with a view to developing tomorrow's leaders within their individual business and the industry as a whole. Nuffield farming member countries span the entire globe, with established programs in Australia, France, Ireland, the Netherlands, New Zealand, Kenya and Zimbabwe, and associate countries also include Brazil, the US, South Africa and the Southern Caucasus. Applications for the 2020 Nuffield Scholar Cohort opened in January and will close on July the 31st this year, 2019, and you can find out more details at nuffieldscholar.org, or if you're overseas, nuffieldinternational.org. And for this episode, I spoke to three different scholars, Georgina Crayford, Jenna Ross and Tim Downs, and asked them all about their Nuffield experiences and why they'd recommend it to others. So if you would like to know more, if you would describe yourself as Nuffield curious, keep on listening. So first up on this Rock and Roll Farming Nuffield special is Georgina Crayford. Georgina, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Will.
Good. Welcome to the podcast. So why don't we start off with a bit about you? Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Kent, and then I disappeared off to Liverpool for about 6 years to do my undergrad degree and PhD, and then since then I've moved back to Kent.
Right, okay. Liverpool must have been a fun city to go to university in.
Yeah, certainly was.
But you're not from a farming background at all. So where did the interest in pigs come from?
Well, it's kind of a convoluted story, but I initially wanted to be a vet, and I ended up doing animal science as my undergrad degree. Uh-huh. And then after I graduated, I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do, and I ended up doing PhD, which was looking at salmonella in pigs. And that was funded by BPEX back when it was BPEX, and it's now AHDB Pork. Mm-hmm. And so it's through my PhD, really, that I sort of learned about the pig industry and then came to work in the industry after I finished my PhD.
Right, okay. So when did you first hear about Nuffield scholarships, and was that something that appealed to you straight away?
Yeah, it definitely appealed to me straight away. So I probably first heard about it when I started my job at the National Pig Association. And my boss, Zoe, there, she'd done a Nuffield herself. And as part of that role, I was trying to encourage other sort of young pig farmers to consider doing a Nuffield. And I obviously did quite a good job of persuading myself to go for it as well.
So how old were you then? What kind of age?
So I would have been, God, I have to think now, how old am I now? So probably 25?
25, yeah, okay. So quite fairly young to do it then, and I guess not long after you finished your other studies.
Yeah, that's right. And I think probably it was on my mind that it was quite a good time to do it.
Yeah.
Around that time, because I didn't have kids and, you know, wasn't managing my own business or anything like that. So it seemed quite a convenient time to do it.
So it wasn't really a big decision then?
Yeah, not as much as I think it perhaps is for other people.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have my own farm to run or to think about how that might be managed with me being away.
Yeah.
And I was really lucky in that my boss was really supportive as well. And she was happy to let me to have extra time off to do the traveling and things like that. So once I decided I wanted to go for it, it wasn't too much of umming and ahhing about whether it was the right thing or not.
Sure. So how did you decide on a subject? Because that, speaking to other people who've done them, that can be quite tricky, can't it?
Yeah, it can. It's something I always say to sort of prospective scholars now, people that speak to me that are thinking about doing it, is I say that it's best to pick a topic that has legs, or that rather has sort of long-term is going to be relevant long term. Mm. So I picked to look at antibiotic use in pigs. So it was quite a hot topic at the time. But during my travels, I started to worry that things were already progressing massively back home in that area. So my advice would be to pick a topic that's still going to be relevant, because it's the best part of 2 years from when you first apply to when you actually hand in your report.
Hmm.
So I picked to look at antibiotic use in pigs because I was already heavily involved in that through my role at the MPA, and it's something I was really passionate about. So I didn't do too much umming and ahhing about a topic, but the challenge, I think, is refining it. So you apply with quite a broad idea of what you want to look at, and then it's not possible to cover everything through your travels, so you have to sort of think about what you want to focus on and how you're going to refine it.
Yeah, okay. So tell me about the journey itself, and I call it a journey because that does tend to be what other Nuffielders describe it as, because it can be quite an emotional roller coaster, can't it, over the 2 years?
Yes, it can. It definitely steals quite a chunk of your life and yeah, your thing, your brain space. I mean, it wasn't too much of an emotional roller coaster for me in terms of the traveling. I enjoyed it mostly. There was one point when I was in Sweden where I just got an overnight ferry from Finland to Sweden, and it chucked me out in Stockholm at 6 o'clock in the morning. Nothing was open, and I couldn't go and check into my hostel, and I ended up just going and sitting in a McDonald's and having a little cry because I felt a bit homesick and I didn't know what to do with myself. So that was probably the lowest point, but I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it wasn't that low.
Yeah.
But in terms of the journey, I was really fortunate because I was able to do the Global Focus program as well as my independent travels. So the Global Focus Program is something that all of the Australian Nuffield scholars have to do, and it's optional for the UK scholars, but there is funding available if somebody wants to do it. So I was quite fortunate that I was able to do that, and it's a 6 or 7 week intensive travel program, and you travel with sort of 8 or 9 other scholars from around the world.
Cool. Yeah.
Visiting various different places. So as part of that, I was able to go to, we went to Singapore, the Philippines, China, Germany, and then the States. So, and that was fantastic, just being able to travel with, you know, other scholars, and not just UK scholars, international scholars. So not only was I learning about the countries we were visiting, I was also learning about the countries of my fellow scholars, because we were talking and comparing what we were seeing to what we know from back home.
Yeah.
So that was fantastic.
So what were some of the highlights?
In terms of highlights of the Global Focus Programme and actually of the Nuffield journey in total, when I was in the Philippines, we had the opportunity to go to the International Rice Research Institute. And while we were there, we were given the opportunity to actually get stuck in. So we were barefoot in the rice paddies, hand transplanting the rice seedlings, and hand ploughing it with this ox. So that was really amazing. And seeing China as well was awesome, because that was somewhere that I thought it would be unlikely that I would ever go there on holiday, just because I don't know where I'd even start to plan a trip to China with the language barriers. And so being able to go there and to see places that you would never see as a tourist, you know, some of the farms that we saw, that was definitely a highlight.
Yeah, definitely. Yes, it's not. I mean, yeah, in a rice field ploughing with oxen isn't something you imagine that you'll do one day, I guess. That's a really cool story. So any funny stories? Did you encounter any weird and wonderful characters along the way?
Everybody that I met along the way was so welcoming. I got to stay with a couple in Denmark. They let me stay with them for a couple of days, and that was great. I didn't have a lot of that through my Nuffield journey, but so the chances when I did get to stay with my host was really great, because I got to see, you know, how they lived their lives, and there's much more opportunity for chatting with them rather than just in meetings or on farm. When I was in China, actually, we went for dinner one evening, and we were in quite a fairly remote place. And while we were having dinner, the locals were actually taking photographs of our group, because some of them had just clearly never seen sort of white Western people before, other than perhaps on TV. So that was pretty, you know, that was pretty weird to be sort of photographed just by the way we look.
So what was your favourite country that you visited?
A lot of people ask that question. It's so hard to answer because it's difficult to pick one country out of all of them. So as part of my independent travel, I went to Scandinavia. So I went to Finland, Sweden and Denmark. I went to the States, and I went to Canada and Australia. So it's really difficult to pick one out. I really liked Canada, and the people there were really friendly. I couldn't say for sure what my favourite country was. It was just amazing to have the opportunity to go to the places that I did, really.
Sure. Okay, so what conclusions did you come to with your report?
So with my report, I guess my sort of main conclusion was that a lot of what we need to do to further reduce antibiotic use on pig farms is already known. So a lot of it is around how pigs are managed and the pig husbandry and cleaning and disinfection. The challenge really is how we get farmers to implement those practices. And I, through my studies, I became really interested in sort of change management and behaviour change. And one of my key recommendations was that we need to be asking, you know, encouraging farmers themselves to come up with the solutions rather than kind of top-down knowledge transfer. So less of the kind of let's invite farmers to this meeting and tell them what they should be doing, and more of let's bring farmers together and pose the question to them and get them to come up with the solutions, because that gives them ownership of the problem and engages them much more.
Definitely. So are you now getting the opportunity to use what you learned to impact the wider industry?
Yeah, so I've recently changed jobs. So I now work for Red Tractor, and previously I worked for the National Pig Association. But I still have close links with AHDB Pork, who funded my scholarship. So they've seen my report, and I've sent over some ideas that I have around what they could be doing in terms of improving that knowledge transfer to farmers. And I think through my role at Red Tractor, you know, a lot of what we're trying to do with the Red Tractor standards is to get people to implement them properly on farm. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to keep at the back of my mind with any sort of new standards is, you know, how can we best word this, or how can we best ensure that this standard is going to be implemented on farm, you know, keeping in mind these kind of behaviour change techniques at the back of my mind.
And would you say Nuffield has been beneficial to your career? I mean, I think I know what you're going to say, but would you say that's true?
Yeah, it definitely has. I think mainly because of just the skills that it's equipped me with. So I've improved in confidence. I used to be quite nervous about going on a farm visit and asking silly questions, particularly because I don't come from a farming background. Mm-hmm. But Nuffield kind of taught me that, you know, it's fine to rock up at a farm and ask silly questions, because unless you ask those silly questions, you're just going to remain in the dark. So it's given me the confidence to be inquisitive, and the importance of networking, I would say. Yeah. So the importance of speaking to people and finding out what they're about and what they've been up to, because you never know what you might find. And that can benefit, you know, that's benefited me in my career, and I'm sure it will going forward as well.
Definitely. So what would you say to anybody who may be thinking of applying?
I would always say to just go for it. I think something that a lot of scholars say is that there's never really a right time. You've just got to go for it, and you will find the time. You know, if you're successful in your application, you will find the time to do it. So if time is the main concern, you know, press on ahead with it anyway. And you know, you'll be pleased with the decision that you've gone for it.
Okay. Right, Georgina, thank you very much for talking to us. It's been really appreciated, and it's been great to hear about your Nuffield journey.
Great. Thanks for the chance to talk about it.
And up next on this special Nuffield episode, we have Jenna Ross. Jenna, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. Welcome to the podcast. And you're from Aberdeenshire, right?
Yes, yeah, originally from Tarland in Aberdeenshire. My parents farm there in partnership with my brother on the McRobert estate. They've got mixed farm enterprise, so beef, sheep, sucklers, cereals, barley mainly for malting. But I'm actually based down near Harpenden now, because I recently took a job with CHAP, which is Crop Health and Protection, one of the new UK agri-tech centres.
Okay, so according to your Nuffield bio, though, like me, you are from a very long line of farmers on both sides of your family.
So both mum and dad are both from farming families. My mum's parents, they originally farmed up at a place called Glenbucket, which is a really remote location in Aberdeenshire. Wow. And then my dad's side, we've had a tenancy in our family since the early 1900s.
Wow.
So
okay.
it's been through quite a few generations.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Do you manage to get, you're obviously down in Harpenden now, do you manage to get back up there regularly?
I try and get up at least once every 2 months if I can. It just depends. Yeah. It depends what holidays pop up. So.
Yeah, it's a fair journey, isn't it? So growing up on the farm, is that where your love of the outdoors and nature came from? I guess it would be.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that I've always been pretty fascinated by the outdoors, but, you know, I think it's such a privilege to grow up where I did, because we were bang on Royal Deeside, you know, Cairngorm National Mountains, the background. Our farm looks straight on to Lochinvar Mountains. And in fact, Pennant's Farm sits on right on something called Royal Queen's View, which was Queen Victoria's favourite viewing spot.
Wow.
And in fact, it's pretty spectacular. And, you know, that sentiment was echoed recently by Prince Charles. He wrote a piece for, I think it was a Country Life magazine, about how it's also one of his favourite spots. Wow. And then last week, I attended the Oxford Farming Conference networking event at the Farmers Club, and I got a chance to meet Princess Anne, and she was asking where it was from, and I was saying to her, and she said it's also one of her favourite spots. So it's a pretty special
place. That's really cool.
It's definitely got the royal seal of approval. So
definitely.
It does make you think, wow. And as I say, that's well and truly the inspiration for me.
Yeah, definitely. So what about mollusks then, specifically slugs? How did you get so interested in them? Because I note that in your LinkedIn profile, you've described yourself as a slug enthusiast.
it's a fair description. I think, you know, I'd always been interested in them growing up, but professionally, it wasn't until I met a really enthusiastic academic from the University of Aberdeen, a guy called Dr. Mike Wilson. And he was just really passionate about the topic, and somehow that translated to me. And I think it brought me back to being that really curious child again. And I think they'd always amaze me that, you know, these animals, it only takes one to survive and establish, and a population can grow because, you know, they're hermaphrodites, they can self-sex. So they're pretty stealth animals. Mm. And because of that, it makes them really severe threats for agriculture. But it also makes them really interesting to study. And so for that reason, I find myself 10 years on still studying these animals. So very curious creatures.
Definitely. And that interest has taken you all around the world during your career so far, hasn't it?
Yeah, I have been very fortunate. You know, when I did my PhD, which was almost 10 years ago now, I had the opportunity to go to Spain. I went to France, the US and South Africa. In fact, when I was in the US, I got involved with this big slug survey project where we were looking for parasites of slugs that could be developed for candidates for biocontrol. And I got the chance to fly out to San Francisco, and we drove up the Pacific Northwest coastline up to Washington State and then drove over to Iowa. It was just amazing. You know, it's, who would have thought that slugs had taken you there? And then, randomly, and then, you know, since finishing my PhD, I lived and I worked in Norway looking at the Spanish slug. Then I was out in South Africa, and I was actually out in South Africa for 6 years looking at biocontrol of slugs. And then I did a year in Tanzania working for the International Institute of Tropical Agriculture. So, you know, the opportunities that come from slugs have been massive.
Definitely, yeah. And in South Africa, at Stellenbosch, of course, you must have enjoyed all those vineyards, I guess.
Well, you know, there's definitely worse places to work. It's good when you can combine slugs and wine tasting at the same time.
So when did you first think about doing a Nuffield scholarship? Was that something you'd always had half a mind on doing one day?
But actually, no. I didn't know much about Nuffield until I happened to be at home, and my parents came home one night, and they'd been at the McRobert Trust annual dinner. And the McRobert Trust fund a Nuffield scholar every year, so it's, you know, quite a close link. Mm. And they happened to hear a talk given by Stephen Sanderson, who is a Nuffield scholar from Orkney, and they said that, you know, his presentation was really good. You know, he'd given this presentation to the tenants and the trustees of the McRobert Trust, and they raved about it for like weeks. So then I thought, well, actually, you know, what is this Nuffield scholarship? What's it about? And so I did a bit of research and realised how amazing this opportunity was, and decided to apply and contacted the Nuffield office. And yet, before I knew it, my application was away, and then suddenly I was invited for an interview. So, yeah.
And what's the title of your study?
Title of my study is Riding the Slime Wave. I tried to make it a bit more serious by saying,
I really like that.
Slug control. Well, you know, the thing is that slugs are the most exciting thing, so anything I can do to like sex them up a little bit. So riding the slime wave was the best thing I could come up with.
No, I really like riding the slime wave. I thought that was really cool. So how did you decide which countries you were going to visit?
Well, I already had some scientists kind of lined up that I'd always wanted to visit, so that was, in some ways, that was an easy bit. But I also did a lot of online research to find out what was current, what new products were coming out, you know, who was doing something that was new and different. And then on top of that, Nuffield give you this book, which is just full of contacts, which is, you know, a ready-to-go Nuffield network. So it's a great way of getting introductions wherever you are in the world. And it's also a great way if you ever need a bed somewhere as well. So, you know, it keeps your travel costs low too.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay, so where did you go to first?
So I was really lucky in that I was selected to go on the Global Focus Program called the GFP, which is unrelated to my own study topic. It's a six-week program where you travel a particular part of the world with some scholars from other parts of the world. So I traveled with scholars from Canada, Ireland, New Zealand, and Australia. And the idea is to give you an overview of what's going on right now in agriculture. So we traveled originally to the US. We were specifically in Oregon. We visited an array of different businesses, dairy, beef, oyster production, nut production. And then we went to DC, which was amazing. Got the chance to visit Capitol Hill and then the New Zealand embassy there. And then from there, we traveled on to Eastern Europe and on to the Ukraine. And then the Ukraine, we traveled from Lviv over to Kiev and just visited really impressive arable farms. I mean, it's the blackest soil that I've ever seen. And then from Kiev, we went down to Kenya, where we were hosted by Dr. Sarah Flowers and the late David Stanley, who was a 1965 Kenyan Nuffield scholar. And our visits there range from, you know, we had a one-to-one meeting with the Australian High Commissioner to Kenya. We also went to David's farm and did some hand milking of cows. We went to visit, you know, flower producers, fruit, arable, macadamia nuts, forestry, seed potato production. It was fantastic. But for me, the highlight of that part of that trip was we went to visit Jackie and Mandy Kenyon's farm. And Jackie's mother, Jane Kenyon, was one of the original three UK Nuffield scholars back in 1947.
Wow.
So it was a real honour to spend time with the real family Nuffield dynasty. So it was really amazing.
Yeah.
And that trip finished off in South Africa, which for me was like going home since I used to live there. And then when we were there, we visited again, you know, Monsanto, a number of different diversification projects. And then going back to what you were asking about earlier, the vineyards, we visited a vineyard that I had actually never heard of. It's called Verganon, and it's located near Stellenbosch, probably closer to a place called Somerset West. And it brought me fully back to my study topic, because this vineyard, they'd been producing wine, but it wasn't great wine, and they had a big problem with slugs and snails. And they come up with this idea of buying in thousands of Indian runner ducks to control, you know, from a cultural control method to reduce their slug and snail damage. And they turned this pest management process into a profitable business by charging people to come and see the duck parade. So it was a really clever business idea, but at the same time they were controlling this big pest. So I'd never been there before, but I was really impressed at this, you know, very entrepreneurial way of controlling slugs and snails. It kind of set the scene for doing my own personal travels. And then for my own travels, after I'd finished that GFP, that Global Focus Program, I visited the US, Canada, Brazil, much of Europe. I went back to Kenya and South Africa because, you know, it's really interesting from a slug perspective. I went to Japan, Australia, New Zealand. And then, you know, each country for me brought a huge amount of value to my study. So in the US, I went and spent time with the USDA to understand their biosecurity protocols and how they prevent slug and snail invasions and how that could possibly be adopted here in the UK. And I was really fascinated to see how they're using citizen science projects to engage with like local schools to control slug invasions. And beyond that, the fact that they have started to engage sniffer dogs. So they've trained these sniffer dogs to identify specific slug and snail species.
Oh, wow.
So they're coming in as treatments. It's amazing.
That's really cool.
They can pick them up. So I really love these alternative approaches, I think, you know, we could potentially learn here in the UK. And then in Canada, I looked at alternative control options. So that includes biological control, cultural practices. And in Canada, I've got quite a funny story, but I was flying out of Alberta and I was in the immigration queue, and you know, it was 6 a.m. in the morning. I was really tired. I wasn't up for any kind of banter. And this what I thought was an American football team joined the queue, and they were really boisterous. And anyway, it was, you know, after 10 minutes or so, I had enough. And I happened to look back and noticed that in the guy, one of the guy's shorts, he had the Scottish flag embroidered on his shorts. In my naivety, I was like, oh, so are you guys the junior rugby team? And the guy just laughed. He's like, no, love, we're the Scottish national team. Which, as a Scot, was very embarrassing. But I had, I think with my Nuffield travels, I've been so caught up in what I was doing. I had no idea that they had played the night before and won against Canada. So it's very embarrassing. But at the same time, by the time we were at, you know, getting boarding the plane, because the Alberta airport's very small, you know, we were all like best friends and I had like 1,000 selfies with them. So
that's really, really kind of cool.
Funny experience. One of those moments where you're just like, oh God, that's really embarrassing. And then in Kenya, I worked quite closely with a local research institute to look at the slug problems there, because when I was on my Global Focus program trip, I noticed that slugs were active there because we were there during the rainy season, but nobody seemed to know whether or not there were pests or not. So I was quite keen to go back, see if we could gather some slugs. So we gathered hundreds of slugs and saw that, yes, they were eating crops. And we were looking to see, again, were they carrying any parasites, and do those parasites have any, you know, are they playing a role in controlling slug populations? And for me, Kenya was really interesting because it's probably the best location to ever collect slugs from. We were on Lake Naivasha collecting slugs surrounded by giraffes. And I mean, it was just something else. You know, it's one of those pinchy moments of how lucky am I.
Yeah.
And then in Australia, I spent some time on farms and government institutes. I did a lot of visits looking at monitoring slug populations. So doing a lot of work where they're modelling data with slug movements and environmental data. And then in New Zealand, I had the chance to catch up with my old PhD supervisor, Dr. Mike Wilson, who I mentioned was my inspiration for all of this. He happens to be based out there, and so he gave me some really great introductions, including a company called H&T, which are doing some really interesting work with seed treatments and slug control. And then I guess full circle to all of this was my final trips were in the UK. So I went to visit number of different researchers and farmers, and I was fascinated. I went to visit the National Museum for Wales, and there's an expert there, and he informed me that over 50% of slug species in the UK are actually exotic, which, you know, from a UK perspective, means we're actually pretty vulnerable to slug invasions.
Yeah.
So I found that this worked and linked really nicely to the study that I was doing with the USDA with developing biosecurity recommendations. So that's been a really interesting bit of work that's come out of my Nuffield. And then beyond that, meeting different farmer groups, I met a guy called Graham Potter, who's based up by York, and he's been doing some really interesting, more integrated pest management, farmer-led research. So doing double rolling, variable applications, stubble raking, soil mapping, using gypsum, just pretty much everything and anything. And I think from my point of view, I'm really interested about how you can take all those results back and work backwards and figure out why they're actually working.
Yeah. So are you looking forward to the end of the journey now and presenting your findings and conclusions to the wider industry?
Yes and no. I think it's bittersweet. I think that I'm excited to, you know, have my report finally finished, and it's currently going through the editing process. So it'll be exciting for people to read it. And I've been enjoying kind of getting out there and speaking about my results and kind of sharing my Nuffield journey. But at the same time, I wish I could go back and do it all again. It was just such an amazing, like, life-changing experience, really.
Yeah. No, it sounds like it. I mean, you're also the Secretary of Nuffield Scotland, so you're involved in that way too. You must meet some just really, really interesting people.
Yeah, I think that came about, not necessarily by accident, at the winter conference at the end of last year, the previous Nuffield Secretary and Chairman were coming to the end of their tenure, I guess, and they were looking for someone to take on the role. And I, you know, was only halfway through my Nuffield journey by that point. But at the same time, I guess I was enthusiastic from being fresh off my travels. And it was a real honour to take it on. And this year we had an event at Scottish Parliament last month. And, you know, we were joined by, you know, the President for NFU Scotland, the CEO for QMS, etc. I mean, a great member, you know, representation from industry, and also good representation from Nuffield scholars. And I think that being able to demonstrate the value and the impact that Nuffield can have, not just on ourselves from, you know, personal development that impact on industry and impact on businesses. So, yeah.
And lastly then, last question. Why should people apply to do an Upfield scholarship? If you know someone's out there, they've maybe always had it on their mind, they quite like to do one, but they've not been sure. Why should they do it? Give us your best sales pitch.
So, firstly, obviously, it's the opportunity to travel the world. I mean, you know, the opportunities are endless there, but it's also more to learn about more an opportunity to learn more about a subject and bring that knowledge back to the UK and back to the industry and or even back to your own business. It's the opportunity for personal development. So it's a real focus on leadership skills. And I think a lot of people, you know, a lot of scholars come away thinking, yeah, I feel a lot more empowered with that. You get a chance to grow your professional network, both directly through Nuffield and indirectly. You get this amazing experience, you know, as part of my Nuffield, of, you know, visited the House of Parliament, Capitol Hill in DC. You meet ambassadors, you know, members of the royal family, went to the Scottish Parliament. You know, I mean, even the Scottish rugby team, even if it was by accident. But, you know, just amazing experiences and also professional development. I never would have thought I'd be working for Crop Health and Protection, you know, and I slugs have got me here indirectly, but now I'm looking at biological invasions as part of my job, soil health, biopesticide development, vertical farming, phenotyping, and in fact, only last week I was in Prague for work, learning about new developments in phenotyping and drone technology, and you know how you can pick up pests and diseases in the field. And I never would have thought I'd be doing this, and that's all part and parcel of Nuffield. So it just opens up so many opportunities. So I think that anyone that's thinking of applying, just do it. I think I always think, what's the worst that can happen? And you know, if anyone wants any more information, then you know, either they can get in contact with myself, whether it's through Twitter at Dr. Jenna Ross, or directly through the Nuffield office. And I'm more than happy to help.
Fantastic. Well, Jenna, it's been great to speak to you, and I'm really looking forward to reading Riding the Slime Wave when it comes out.
Thank you very much.
And the last but definitely not least guest for this Rock and Roll Farming Nuffield special is dairy farmer Tim Downs. Tim, how are you?
I'm good, thank you, Will. Very good.
Good. And you are based near Shrewsbury, right?
Yes, just south of Shrewsbury.
That's always a bone of contention, isn't it? But, are you from that area originally?
Yes, definitely. Born and educated in Shropshire, and lucky enough to travel a little bit further afield on what we're talking about currently.
So tell us about the farm itself. What have you got going on there?
Well, we're an organic farm since 1998. We began our conversion just at the point that Louise, my wife, and I went off and did a little bit of preliminary travelling. We decided that it would be an opportunity to convert the farm to organic farming. We're a dairy farm, and we finished beef for Waitrose as well. So we're very much involved with OMSCO, the organic dairy people.
Okay, so when you decided to go organic, was there anything in particular that prompted that?
Well, it was a little bit heart and a little bit wallet at the time. The supermarkets back then were offering an increase in milk price, and we were virtually there. We were milking about 180 cows on a grass-based system that suited the direction of travel. So we ended up converting and putting the farm into organic conversion. And now, to this day, currently, we're now milking just under 500 cows on two separate units. So in that regard, it has grown with us. And, we're very pleased we made the plunge.
You'd be in a good part of the country there for grass growth in Shropshire. Yes. Plenty of rain. Yes.
Plenty of rain. So we make the most of it, and we're very much a grazing farm. And that has been as a consequence of all my travels and seeing other operations worldwide. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, we've tried to copy them and be a spy to bring ideas back. And, yeah, we've got heavily involved with discussion groups and the like as well.
Yes, on that, you are extremely active in the wider industry. You're an OMSCO board member, you've been a professional advisor to Harper Adams University, you've been on the NFU
Organic Issues Group and the Dairy Co Research Advisory Board Committee. You're on the RABDF Committee. You work with the Trehane Trust. You're a farmer ambassador to the Woodland Trust, and you're part of the organising group for the November Nuffield Conference. First of all, how do you find the time for all that? But also, you're obviously extremely passionate about the industry in general.
I need to draw for a few of those. I don't have any time for anything else. No. It does get quite full, and I do have to manage it well. Luckily, we've got a fantastic team at the farm at Longner and Webscott Farm that allow me to integrate with all of these wonderful groups that really do benefit us and the wider industry as well. So I hope I'm giving a little bit back and gaining a bit of foresight and knowledge of the wider industry as we go.
Yeah. Okay. And as if you haven't got enough going on, you're also taking part in Open Farm Sunday again in June.
Yes. Yeah. We're looking forward to that. And the following 2 days, we've got two schools from Wolverhampton coming around with a chef feeding the children with produce from the locality as well, and some cheddar cheese off the farm here produced by our milk down at White Farm. So really looking forward to that. Nothing like giving them a chance to see what actually goes on a working farm.
Definitely. How long have you been doing those kind of visits?
Well, this is through FACE, Farming and Countryside Education. So they approached us. My wife, Louise, has been on a training course. And, we really enjoy showing people around. Have a lot of educational visits, be that Harper Adams and the local primary school and various other groups as well. And the odd barn dance thrown in, which is always good fun, isn't it? And a Kaylee. So all good fun.
Definitely. So how did you first hear about Nuffield? And was that something that immediately appealed to you?
I think I was involved with a group that went on a visit to North Wales around a paper factory. I remember it clearly, being sat next to Alan and Anne Beckett from Beckett's Farm Shop, the other side of Birmingham. And they said, Tim, have you considered doing a Nuffield scholarship? And this would have been back in 2003. And I hadn't really come across it at all. They explained the detail. And there was a few other Nuffield scholars who I really respected in the room as well. And they sort of gave me a nudge. And I came back and looked at it and was quite intrigued and put an application in between Christmas and New Year. The interviews were the following spring. Went down to London, had an interview, and the rest is history. Really enjoyed the whole experience. But if it wasn't for that chance meeting, then I probably wouldn't have known about it or applied. But it's a lot more visual now, and people do have a lot more knowledge about Nuffield, certainly from the groups I've spoken to.
Okay. Now, you hear sometimes from farmers that they quite like to do a Nuffield, but they're too busy on the farm, they've got too many other things going on. What do you say to that when people say that to you?
I think you put into life what you want to get out of it, and certainly the more people you meet of so many different backgrounds through Nuffield, it's given me a whole different vista and a whole different set of doors that have opened that wouldn't have beforehand. And thoroughly enjoyed the whole experience of Nuffield. They're a cracking group of people who get to ask questions in a really good environment, and learned a huge amount from the variety of people who were doing Nuffields at the same time as myself and ever since, really.
So how did you decide what to study?
I was quite involved with discussion groups and equipping people with knowledge on farm, so thought that was a natural question to ask and try and further a bit of knowledge in that area. certainly aware that the actual study topic isn't the be all and end all. Mm. And if people have got an idea that they want to do an Nuffield, then having an area that can be studied is important, but isn't crucial. They need to be aware of that.
Yeah. Okay. So when you first got the approval and you decided to do it, how did you go about deciding which countries to visit?
Well, would you believe it? The first thought I had was, oh, really want to go to Colombia, because that sounds a fascinating area for agriculture. But that was just at the time where a lot of people were being kidnapped. So that one was quickly scrubbed off the list. So I did manage to go to South America and travel extensively in Argentina and visit some really interesting research organizations, farms, and then Australia and New Zealand, looking at their discussion groups, because at that stage they were leading the way in getting farmers to integrate with research, feed information back in, and actually get out on farm and, with the use of a good facilitator, make some real strides forward.
Mm. Okay, so tell us about your experiences, because studying a topic like that in particular, you must have met some really interesting people.
Oh, yes, I had a huge amount of meetings set up in Australia, went around some farms that were researching how to cope after salination, and not something I'd ever come across before at the time. And yeah, different grass species and the research and the money they were pouring into that from a farmer's pocket, not through any group in particular. And they were really improving their farms in Western Australia. Mm. And then looking a group met up with a group of apple growers in northern South Island, New Zealand, who were doing something different as well that I'd never come across before. And left time in the schedule for people to advise, oh, Tim, you must, while you're here, this guy is just what your topic area would benefit from seeing. So, met some interesting guys, not just from the university basis, but also farmers, also researchers, levy boards, and then had a chance meeting in Argentina, which ended up being lunch with the British ambassador in Buenos Aires, which had no expectation that was going to happen.
Wow. Wow, yeah. That's really cool. I mean, what was the? I guess that was one of the highlights. But what were the highlights of the experience?
Well, going around the Liniers cattle market in Buenos Aires, where something 9,000 head of cattle are sold all on horseback in wooden corrals, and how that operated in virtually the suburbs or virtually on the edge of Buenos Aires was quite fascinating to witness.
Yeah, I'll bet it was. So what were some of your key findings, and was there anything that particularly surprised you or that you weren't expecting?
Certainly the key findings were that a discussion group is a wonderful medium for farmers to learn and share knowledge, because if you've got a group of 20 farmers there's so much experience and knowledge in the group, but what it hinges on is having the best facilitator who can actually assist people to extract the knowledge from the group, put it up on a board at the start, get people to engage. And that was something that, although maybe obvious, we've seen when we do have a group day or a discussion group day and the facilitator isn't available, you don't get the same interaction, you don't get the same response from the group, and training people, keeping the group as exchanging chairmanship of the group and rolling it on constantly, so the younger members of the group get chance to involve themselves, which in turn creates leadership in them and confidence in them as well.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of different learnings that we've implemented into Stargrazers, certainly.
And knowledge sharing and peer-to-peer learning in the UK farming has come on in leaps and bounds over the last few years, something you hear and read a lot about now. You must be encouraged by that.
Oh, definitely encouraged. And it's been tough. I think we've been concerned that a lot of research a while back was pouring over research that had been done previously. And it's only now that we're starting to actually look at the benefits of what has gone on historically and actually put that out on farm as well. And yeah, I think the levy boards certainly have a place in making sure that the research is up to date and put out on farm.
Yeah, definitely. Your involvement with Nuffield has continued, as you are the primary contact for the Nuffield Farming Scholarship Trust Dairy Study Group. What role do regional and study groups play in supporting scholars?
Well, once scholars have actually returned and presented their report and spoken at the conference, then that opens the door to all of the regional and group discussion groups or meetings and study tours, and those have been brilliant. I've been on many groups over the last 15 years, and they've visited some really top performing farms and got deeper into the farm by view of using similar techniques and drilling down and asking questions that are quite pertinent, but getting to the bottom of issues that are up to date and that the group would benefit from the likes of labour and more global issues as well. And I suppose it's opened my eyes to the actual global marketplace that farming is fitted into and is having to fit into currently.
Yeah, definitely. So what would you say to anyone listening who might be thinking of applying?
Oh, definitely give it a go. I think the whole process is rewarding. The whole group of people that should you be lucky enough to be one of the 20 to 22 that are chosen per year, it really is a group that is definitely worth keeping in touch with. It's a Nuffield for life rather than just a single year and something you complete and then move on to a different stage. I think there's a lot to be gained from staying in touch with the fellow scholars on a long-term basis, because their studies are so varied and so up to date, and very often people go head off on a study tour. And to give an example, one chap in our year headed off to Australia and came back with a whole new program for analysing on-farm costings, which was developed as the what if scenario. What if I do these problems, how is that going to change the farm in the next stage and future projections? So totally different than what he intended to study, but found something unique and something that would benefit the wider industry as a whole, and that was used extensively.
Okay, so we mentioned the Nuffield conference earlier that you're helping to organize. If anyone wants to add their support or get involved in any way, where can they get in touch with you?
They can certainly get in touch with me, and there will be contact details at the Nuffield Farming Scholarship Trust, and Mike Vacher is the organiser and doing a wonderful job getting all of the conference organised with help from Poey, his wife, and it's going to be a really top class conference again this autumn in the Midlands. So there'll be some Midlands themes to it, and we're trying to encourage as much involvement from businesses and agricultural supplies in the vicinity and area, really.
Mm. Okay. And before we go, I should also mention that you are in training to row across the Irish Sea at the moment to raise funds for the Royal Agricultural Benevolent Institution. When does that take place?
That's on the 1st or 2nd of May. We'll be heading across to Ireland. We may need our passports this year, which is going to be a little bit different, but that's a whole different story. We've gone very well without mentioning the B word. And then 90 miles later, we should arrive in Aberystwyth, weather willing and God willing, that we can get across the sea.
Fantastic. So competing
with another 25 teams from Ireland and Wales. 12 of us in a team, 2 teams from Shropshire, that well-known sea rowing county. So it's something that gets me to meet up with a different group of friends, and that's something that Nuffield has shown is important as well, to have a sport or a pastime that we can get involved with and get away to.
Well, best of luck. I hope it all goes well. Look forward to
seeing you. A little running adventure as well.
Yes. Yeah.
That sounds far worse.
Yeah, I don't know. Those choppy seas. I don't fancy that myself. So
yeah, at least you won't get seasick or turn green.
Exactly.
Well, you might turn green at mile 20.
I would imagine I will. Right. Thank you very much, Tim. It's been really, really interesting to hear about your Nuffield travels and experiences. And best of luck with everything, and hopefully speak again soon.
Will do. Thanks ever so much, Will.
Cheers, Tim. All the best.
Cheers. Bye.